This is Conversations with Safe Harbor Therapy, where your friendly practitioners from Safe Harbor Therapy Center come together to discuss life, wellness, and other topics that are important to you. Our team at Safe Harbor Therapy Center offers health and wellness services for body, mind, and soul to clients in Winnipeg and the surrounding areas. And I am Carmen Okmatovsky, marriage and family therapist and director of Safe Harbor Therapy Center. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Carmen Okmatovsky, and I'm the host of Conversations with Safe Harbor Therapy. And I'm here today with Jody Krulik and Kira Monk. Jody is a Master's of Arts in Counseling Psychology student. She has a teaching degree and is a certified school counselor in the province of Manitoba. She's been in the education field for over 10 years, working with adults and young adults, always in a helping role. Jody believes in lifelong education and is married and has two adult children who are in university. Jody, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So Kira Monk is also a Master's of Arts in Counseling Psychology student and has a Bachelor's in Human Nutritional Sciences. Kira decided to be a therapist after starting her own therapy journey and works as a crisis counselor at Clinic Community Health. Kira lives in Winnipeg with her husband and enjoys spending time reading and being outside. Welcome, Kira.
Happy to be here.
Okay, so today we planned on talking about what it's like to be a new therapist, just coming in, just starting. Well, you're both doing your practica at Safe Harbor, but it's a private practice practicum, so you're essentially running a private practice while you're doing your practicum. And so, like, what's that like? And I would also like to talk about, like, some of the wisdom or the things that are really sticking out to you as some of the more profound parts of your work. And then maybe we can also talk about self-care toward the end of our time together.
Perfect. Sounds good.
All right. So, Jody, maybe would you like to talk to us about how you decided to pursue this line of work?
Yeah, sure. You know, like, just like you said in my introduction, lifelong learning, I don't think I'll ever stop. I don't know what's next. And I don't know what I'm going to be when I grow up still. So I even my education, my teaching degree, I took when I was older. And then I did a post baccalaureate in counseling.
Okay.
Just always grew up wanting to help. I just always feel like I talk less in a conversation, and that's sort of one of the key things. Follow along and encourage the other to sort of carry on. My whole life, I don't know why, but that's So yeah.
I find in my personal life that I ask people a lot of questions out of habit now,
absolutely.
And I forget that I'm supposed to answer back.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. Or reciprocate.
Yeah,
completely. Exactly. Yeah, that's how it's always been. And people like to talk about themselves. So I find it really easy to be the listener. That's what I like to do.
So this line of work matches with your personality and the way that you approach the world.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Exactly.
So then how did you decide to do, like, this particular master's? Because you were already a school counselor.
The school system was not for me. It didn't do it for me the way that I wanted it to. And so the next natural step was becoming a therapist, a psychotherapist in Manitoba. And this program itself at Yorkville University, I found was accredited. I did some research on different ones, but it had to be online for me. And this one was recognized by the CCC. So then I felt confident in the program itself.
And that would be the Canadian Counselors and Psychotherapists Association, CCPA, do you mean?
Yeah, CCPA, yeah. So that's why I chose that program and the online. I was in a bit of a rut and coming up to this program, and it was kind of a split decision, but I needed it to motivate me to just get into something. And like I said, this was the natural step for me. So I applied in like April and started in May. Like, I was just giving her. I was ready to do it. Yeah.
That's really quick.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't a lot of pre-planning going on there, But it really worked out. And man, was it eye-opening getting that, going into that first course after not being in classes for a long time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, it was something.
I can imagine.
Intimidating. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm usually pretty confident in my schoolwork, but not this time. Yeah. No, they taught me a lesson. Game. Oh, it was a total different ball game. Yeah. Yeah. So
what do you think was more challenging about this?
That's a good question. The level of like the expectations were quite high, I found, mm-hmm. in terms of the writing and the assignments, because I can write a paper, but for some reason I guess I was rusty. I think I was just really rusty. Like my first paper, I was like, what? I've never got a mark like that before. Yeah. But it was eye-opening. And but you learn as you go, and I did, and I did well. So mm-hmm. yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I found, I did a different program than what you're doing, but I found that my marks were not where I wanted them to be, like, and where I was used to them being in mm-hmm. my undergrad. And I finally went to a friend because I was like, you're getting all A's. Like, why can't I seem to crack mm-hmm. that level? And she's like, well, are you including personal reflection? And I was like, mm-hmm. why would I put personal reflection in a paper?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question.
You're in line to be a therapist. Like, mm-hmm. you need to be able to connect your own personal. I was like, oh, I didn't put that together.
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
And that was the hardest part, right? To be honest, like, to do all that self-reflection and really dig deep. Personally, mm-hmm. it was, of course, really great training, but also the hardest part of writing a paper, because usually you can just throw out facts and be really heady and you get a good grade.
Right, exactly.
This
yeah.
is much more like interpersonal and relational.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a big part of school, is the reflection, and you learn so much about yourself mm-hmm. through these assignments and programs. Mm-hmm. That's what I always find. Mm-hmm. My post-bac, I just learned so much. I grew so much. Mm-hmm. And here too, just... mm-hmm. Yeah, so much to learn. So much to learn. Still learning.
Yeah.
I'm 6 months into my practicum and there's still lots to learn.
For a lifetime.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then, Kira, how about you? How did you decide to come along this line?
I took like a little bit of a non-conventional route, I suppose. I never, ever thought I would do a master's degree in anything. My brother did his master's degree right out of his bachelor's, and I thought, good for you, that won't be me. And I, you know, got my bachelor's, got a full-time job, was working, was fine, everything was fine. And then there was like some transitions happening in my life, and I thought to myself, I needed a little bit of extra support, so then I sought out a therapist for myself. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like this eye-opening experience of like, oh, like this is really helpful. And this is, you know, something maybe that I think I could be good at. Mm-hmm. Just because like kind of like what Jody was talking about, in the sense of like people often would come to me to listen and to, you know, be that person to like bounce ideas off of. And I loved being that person. I love mm-hmm. being the person that everyone comes to for things. And I thought, oh, like maybe it could be something that I'm doing for like my job. Mm-hmm. So then I sort of started to look into master's programs because I understood that was kind of the direction I had to take. I looked a little bit into one that's offered in Winnipeg here. And that one was a little bit harder to get into, especially at, I mean, I wasn't young by any means, but at the age I was, I know they sometimes look for more like mature students and things. So as I was looking for all of this, I decided to volunteer at Clinic Community Health. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting there. When you do the volunteering, you do like a pretty intensive training. I think it's 3 months or 3.5 months of wow. like, I think almost 7 hours a week where you're training with a group. And, you know, learning the counseling skills, learning all these things. And so it was kind of like a really good baseline for me. And I thought, I'm gonna volunteer at Clinic because it's a year commitment. And I figured, do this. And then that way I know if the master's program is, you know, the right fit for me, instead of going into a master's program and then deciding, you know, when I'm a year into it, that maybe this wasn't for me. So then finished the training, got onto the lines at clinic, and truly, like, believed, like, this is exactly who I am supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, quite life-changing. It was, I feel so, like, honored and privileged to be the person who gets to answer the phone and gets to talk to people in all parts of their life, right? Sometimes we're talking to people for check-ins, you know, sometimes we're talking to people who are really going through a hard time, and I get to be the person to do that with them. And I just feel like it's truly the best job in the world.
It is a really honored position.
Yeah. It just, I feel such a privilege to be that person on the other end of the phone. So then I was like, well, that answers my question. So then I started looking into master's programs and, you know, chatted with my therapist about it. And I sort of asked her, I said, you know, like, if someone were to come work here, would you have a preference of where they got their schooling? She was like, no, like, what's more important to me is what you do afterwards, who you surround yourself with, the extra education that you're going to do. And I said, okay. So I thought an online program would be good. I was working full time, still volunteering at clinic at that point. And I thought, you know, the flexibility of Yorkville would allow me to sort of continue that part of, like, those pieces of my life. There's also a lot of people at clinic who have done Yorkville and who now have successful private practices. So there was a lot of people there to talk to about it too. So it just sort of felt like that next step. And it was, it felt kind of like the right one for me.
And has it been what you thought it would be?
It's very, like, school, this particular program is very different to me, for me, from the other schooling that I did, simply because I have a bachelor's in science. So we did, you know, multiple choice exams. We didn't write papers. We didn't really do anything that involved a lot of, you know, writing. And so that's been a bit of a transition for me. But I think, you know, it's given, like, a really good foundation of learning. I do think that, like, clinic has helped sort of shape me into the person, into the therapist that I am today. But I think that Yorkville has given me a good, like, place to start and sort of continue learning how to do this. Cause I feel like Jody's right. Like, we're going to keep learning every single day. Right. So it's been good though. I think it's been a really good fit, and I feel happy that I sort of took that jump
good
to do it. Yeah.
It's important to find something that you're passionate about.
Yeah. And it feels right. And then now being here at Safe Harbor doing my practicum has also been, you know, I'm learning a ton. I wanted to do it this way so that I could, you know, again, kind of make sure that I wanted to do private afterwards. And it's, like, really solidified that for me, I think, because it really gives just a whole different, like, perspective on what therapy can look like for us as a therapist.
So are you like comparing clinic to private? Is that when you
a
say
a little bit? Like, yeah, because, like, community is so valuable. Like, the community work is so valuable and it's so important, and I am so lucky to be doing it, but it's very different to private practice. So I wanted to be able to have that experience. I wanted to be able to sort of have that chance to build myself up as an individual in practicum when I was learning and had support from, you know, everyone here and my supervisor and my peers, instead of graduating from the program and then trying to do it and sort of feeling like a little bit, like, lost in that sense. That was kind of my thinking and how I landed here.
It kind of gives you a place to, like, develop yourself as a private practitioner if you want to continue.
Yeah,
it makes it easy to launch, because I find that in community the work is really difficult, but also you tend to have more system support and more colleague support. In private practice, I won't say the work isn't difficult, but it's a different kind of
it
difficult.
Is yeah,
and then we tend to not have as many colleagues around.
And that's
so we have
true
to find it and create our own communities.
I was actually just talking to one of the other therapists here yesterday about how, you know, being here sometimes can be a really lonely thing. You know, you're talking to people all day, and that part is so valuable, but then you're kind of like, you might not see anyone else. So that part was kind of an adjustment for me of this, right. You know, I'm going from a place where I'm in a room with everyone and, you know, we'll take a call. And if we need to talk about how we're feeling, we can. Yeah. To now being in a space where like, yeah, everyone's busy. Everyone's seeing, you know, clients and we might not see each other all day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everyone's pretty solitary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I found that I have this running joke that all of my friends are therapists. Yeah. And I mean, not only is it true for the most part, I know a couple people who are not, but I think it's like naturally occurring because we need support people mm-hmm. who understand the work.
Right.
And who also are bound by confidentiality. Like for instance, some mm-hmm. of my friends would be from my supervision group.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. then I can go to them and be like, hey, mm-hmm. can I debrief this thing with you?
Yeah.
And then we're still, because it can be really isolating work, right? Yeah. You can't just go home and like spill all the beans to your partner.
Right.
That's interesting.
Or to your bestie.
Yeah, that's interesting you should say that, because the first few months I was here, my friends noticed I was more quiet because I couldn't share.
Yeah.
There was nothing to share. And so I didn't internalize it by any means, but it just, you know, it was like, where's, you gotta draw that line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was, yeah, it's still going to be a challenge and something to transit. Like,
It's hard. I have a friend who graduated from Yorkville the semester before I started practicum. So she's kind of been my sounding board for a lot of things. She talks me off the ledge probably once a week at this point, but it's, you know, it's a person who understands, like intimately understands, mm-hmm. you know, the ups and downs of practicum and then the ups and downs that she's facing in her own private practice that she's now opened and mm-hmm. all these things. But I just think that like the friendship is so valuable because we both are so aware of the feelings that the other person has because we're kind of having them at the same time. Mm-hmm. So it's been mm-hmm. it's been really good to have that person there for me.
So I want to go over and ask you, speaking of practicum and all of the ups and downs, what are some of the more profound or meaningful nuggets or experiences that you're encountering in practicum?
I learned a lot of things about things that I didn't know I needed to know, if that makes any sense.
Like what?
Well, I had this one experience where a client asked if she could give me a hug at the end of it. I had no idea what to do. Like I kind of froze like a deer in headlights. And she brought it up. She goes, oh no, now I made you uncomfortable. I'll never ask again. I'm sorry. And I sort of kind of gave her a side hug. And then following appointment, she's like, I won't ask again. Don't worry. I won't ask again. And then this very last one, she did ask again. Mm-hmm. And she brought me a little treat.
Okay.
Like it's kind of like, and so when I talk to my supervisor about these moments, she goes, these are things you have to think about. These are things you have to think about ahead of time. And what is your boundary? What are you comfortable with?
Yeah.
Like there are certain clients that I would feel comfortable showing, having different boundaries with. Right. Mm-hmm. And that was one of them for sure. She's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, And then just when you come to your supervisor with these ideas and she just brings it back on you and then you know, yeah.
I'm glad to know she's doing
that. Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. She's priceless. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like transference where, you know, triggering stuff for you.
Yeah.
And this was the same client. She was speaking of death and loss mm-hmm. and the way that she spoke about it really struck me. And I was this close to like getting a little teary eyed mm-hmm. and I had never experienced that before.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way she talked about it really. And I think, I don't know if it was that day
mm-hmm.
or for that, or, you know, cause I've had loss in my life or mm-hmm. I just, for whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
So that was learning experience. And then I would say the last one is this gentleman who always got to the point in the session near the end where he would begin to talk about his trauma, his past trauma.
And like in the last 30 seconds of session,
last couple minutes. yeah. Last couple minutes. And it happened maybe three times. And I finally brought it up. I said, hey, isn't it funny how we get to this point in our conversation at the end of every session, but we haven't talked about it before.
Right.
And so the very next, he's like, I'm ready now. I'm ready to talk about it. But then when we came to the next session, I wasn't going to be the one who started there.
Sure.
Right. Mm. So, but he got there. He got there. Okay. So, but yeah. But
so you learned what doorknobbing is.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Exactly.
We all go through that.
Yeah.
I think we all go through it both as clients and as therapists.
Yeah. Yeah. I can definitely say I've done that as a client. Mm-hmm. And then having it done to me, I'm like, oh, don't do that again. Like, buried the lead there. Yeah. Yeah, it's been interesting. I think that, like, for me, I think there's a lot of different takeaways. Because I was doing a level of the work before, it was a big transition to sort of go from that, you know, high risk, very intense possible conversations to then coming into a situation where, you know, we're not always talking about the risks that I'm talking about in the other parts of my life, right? So that was kind of a big transition for me. You know, it's something that I'm very comfortable talking about, so I'm not afraid of that. But I think that, you know, what I come back to is being kind of like the human before the therapist. And I think that's important, and to, you know, recognize that, like, we have experiences. There's going to be things that people talk about that, you know, bring up something for us. Mm-hmm. And that's the truth, right? And I think that it's okay to acknowledge those moments a little bit and to show, like, you know, that reminds me of something that happened to me, or, you know, walking that line of being like, you know, I'm here, I'm listening, I don't want to take away from how you're feeling, but I do want you to know that, like, I know what you're feeling, right? I understand it.
I'm human too.
Yeah, because I just think that, like, that's what makes it so real, is the very real connection you have between therapist and client.
Well, that's what makes the therapeutic relationship possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
This idea of being human first and being therapist second also is why it's so, so important for therapists to encounter themselves and to do their own work. It's because if we start getting triggered and we haven't done our own work, and I use that word lightly, because it could be like a little too big T, you know?
it could
just be like, oh, that stirs something in me, and suddenly I'm thinking about when my dog died rather than when your dog died. I shouldn't say that so flippantly, because it's not a flippant thing. But yeah, like, I can sort of suddenly get lost in my thoughts and then not pick up what a client is saying.
Yeah.
Or if I'm, you know, if my wounds haven't been healed, or if I haven't reduced my reactivity to them, then I can get into a place, like you were saying, Jay, with the counter transference. And so this is why the work is so important.
On both sides.
Right.
I always think about 7 years ago when I entered that therapy room as the client for the first time. I said to my therapist, I said, my name's Kira and I don't do feelings. And then we've, like, now we're here, and I'm like, no, we do all, I know, she jokes all the time, she's like, I'm gonna frame that for you. I'm like, okay. But it's true, like, at that point, I was a person who was, like, not, it wasn't gonna be a thing I did, but, you know, through the work that we did together, because of the relationship that we built, I'm no longer afraid of feelings, obviously, but, it's so interesting, because that's such a common theme that I see in people, and it's, like, you know, teaching yourself that feelings aren't dangerous and that, you know, discomfort doesn't mean there's a threat is so valuable, to be able to sort of immerse yourself into them. Because I think that, like, I didn't want to do any of them because I was so afraid of what that meant. And now I get to experience life in, like, a fully different way because I know that, like, they're not going to hurt me the way I thought they would.
Well, I love that. That discomfort doesn't mean threat.
Yeah.
It's just discomfort.
It's just discomfort. It doesn't mean that, like, I always say, like, the discomfort, feeling that discomfort doesn't mean the sky is going to fall. It doesn't mean the world is going to end. It just means that we're uncomfortable right now and things feel a little bit unsafe. And so how do we teach ourselves to feel safe in the discomfort? And I had to do that. And it's possible for sure. It's not easy. It's not comfortable, but it's something that can be done and can be done through, like, you know, the relationship and leaning back onto the fact that, like, you don't do it alone, which was really big for me.
What I found more common in the clients that I've had is that they cannot identify feelings. Like, they're feeling something. They have no idea how to describe it. No idea how to label it. So we do a lot of work on that.
Yeah.
A lot of work on identifying feelings.
There's a lot of power in that, right? When you give a name to something, it becomes less scary. It becomes less intimidating and big. And it's sort of like, okay, if we throw a name onto it, now we can sort of start to let it go. Because it's not this big, dark, crazy cloud of danger. So.
You can naming it and also learning the nature of it.
Yeah.
Like, if I have anger, is it the size of a tennis ball or is it the size of an elephant? Like, exactly how much anger are we talking about? One might need a little less work than the other. One might be less intimidating. I might be more willing to talk about my little anger than my big anger. I also like just to put human names on my feelings.
I love that.
Usually ridiculous names, so they make me grin when I'm saying them. So can we talk about building connection with clients? Like, because you were saying we need to have this humanness, this is how we build the connection. Talk to me a little bit about, like, what you do and how you do that, and, like, just the whole process.
Just unconditional positive regard and that old chestnut. Empathy and active listening. It's just to me, it comes so natural. So it's a simple thing. But even a client today said, I asked how he felt after it was his first session. And he said, like, good, because I'm not judged. And, you know, so it's that kind of environment that you're setting up. So it's safe and non-judgmental and, I don't know what else to add to that.
No, but I think that makes sense. I think that, you're right. Like, empathy and validation and, like, you know, believing people when they say things goes a long way. I also honestly, like, if someone's talking to me about something that they're doing after a session, it's like, you know, I talked to a client about a show they were watching and it was like, oh, like, I know about that show. So we sort of, like, it's like, oh, you're going to go watch, you know, this person on this show. And it's sort of builds that relationship of, like, oh, they understand, or, you know, like,
again, it doesn't, you're human.
Like, you're gonna go watch Love Island, I love Love Island, you know. we can talk about that for a minute. So, like, those sort of things, right, to show that we're human, we do things, we have interests. And, you know, I talked to someone, we sort of talked a little bit about, like, books that they were reading and how, like, I had also read the books, and sort of there's that, like, commonality of, like, you know, you're reading this book and it's like, okay, like, I can tell you, like, whether it's going to get good or not, or those sort of things. I know someone once asked me, they were reading a book and they were like, can you tell me if this is going to trigger me more than the last one did? And I said, no, you know, because I knew what we were talking about. So those, like, common interests, or honestly just being open and interested in what they're saying,
right,
is really important. Because I think, as, like, a person, if you're talking to someone about something that you're really excited about, or something that interests you, like, it doesn't feel nice when someone sort of just sort of, you know, listens to listen and then moves on. So,
and writes notes about it.
Seriously. So it's uncomfortable. But then you have the situation where if you're, you know, actually talking to them, and you're interested in what they're saying, I think that goes a long way.
I would say I struggled with that in the beginning of my practice, because I just felt like there had to be such a hard line for things. But then again, talking to my supervisor, she's just like, you can be a person in there. And then you find these natural lines, right, that you don't want to cross and everything. But definitely I'm a lot more personable than I was when I started.
Yeah, I think it's a skill, right? It's a skill to learn, you know, what you're comfortable sharing, what you feel is going to, like, help with the therapeutic relationship.
That's right.
Without taking away from the reason that they're there and the needs, right? But yeah, I think
so
it's...
So it doesn't become an overshare.
Exactly. Right. They're not counseling us. Yeah. Exactly.
It's
yeah.
It's a timeline to share and be human, but also mm-hmm. to make sure that this is not mm-hmm. becoming a reverse.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And mm-hmm. it's, I think everyone gets to decide where that line is,
yeah,
right?
Is
like, yeah, mm-hmm. like there's definitely folks that I know who don't share much. And then there's folks that I know that maybe share a little too much. Mm-hmm. And it's just sort of like, you get to decide at this point, like where that line is for you.
That just made me think of like the emotion that you bring to it too, as a therapist,
mm-hmm.
how much emotion you share and how much you don't.
Mm-hmm.
I know some people who share very, very little emotion.
Couldn't be me.
Therapists.
Okay.
Couldn't be me.
We share very little emotion, and that's just how they are.
Yeah.
I find with the right client, we laugh and laugh.
Yeah.
And share a sense of humor.
Yeah.
Together, and that, but it's a different relationship with each client.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely. I know when I first started therapy as a client, it really freaked me out. The vulnerability of it freaked mm-hmm. me out so much, and I just wanted to know, like, I'm not just a number, right?
Yeah.
I'm actually a human being
yeah.
to you. And mm-hmm. I had a really hard time with that. Ironically, mm-hmm. one of my sons has a really hard time with it too. And,
yeah.
You know, he's like, but then they're being paid to care about me.
Yeah.
Right.
But also, no one else is just going to sit around and listen to me talk.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. But then there's the little things. Like, I know my therapist has said to me on numerous occasions, like, oh, I was driving by like a place where I used to work, and she was like, oh, I thought of you. Or when there was a lot of stuff going on with like the wildfires, she was like, came in, she was like, oh, like, is there, like, are you good? Like, are, you know, asking mm-hmm. questions, because she thought about me when these things were going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like, oh, okay. Like, I am not a number in this situation, mm-hmm. right? Like, those pieces made it so that it was like, you actually care, mm-hmm. not
yeah,
just because I'm paying you.
You can't actually pay someone to care.
No, absolutely not.
You can pay for the time, but you can't pay for the...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. That's what that relationship is.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you have to build.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like the best part.
It is the best part.
Honestly,
yeah.
It is the best part, mm-hmm. is to be able to sit with these people and build these relationships. They're unique to every person, and mm-hmm. everyone has a different just approach, and it just feels like the best.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about how you take care of yourself as a therapist, so that you aren't overwhelmed or burnt out. We were kind of talking about this a little bit before we started recording, where I was saying that one of my clients is constantly worried that I'm getting overwhelmed by their trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't find that to be a problem in my practice.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not talking about my trauma.
Yeah.
Right? We're talking about somebody else's struggle or somebody else's trauma. So, of course, every once in a while, there'll be something that we take home.
Yeah.
And also, there has to be like a certain amount of like self-care in between. So mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. what I'm saying is, I don't tend to get stuck on individual people or individual
yeah.
stories, but the overall self-care in between
right.
work days or mm-hmm. on weekends definitely needs to be in place. So like, what do the two of you do to take care of yourselves?
You want to go first?
Sure. I mean, honestly, it's different every day. I love to read. So there's like a lot of time spent reading.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, you know, even between sessions, I'm like, I'm going to catch up on admin. Absolutely not. That computer's closed. I'm reading a book, because sometimes mm-hmm. I just need that time to turn my brain off.
Yes.
I, you know, self-care for me looks, yeah, it's different every day. It's mostly reading. I do try to go on walks a lot. Me and my husband will try to do that, just kind of around where we live.
Which is amazing for cortisol.
Yeah. Yeah.
Generally releasing and resetting.
And it really helps to just like get out of the house, like get that mm-hmm. bit of fresh air.
Fresh air.
We always like, I'm on the, like looking around for like cats in the neighborhood to say hi to, like just all these things that bring me like little pockets of joy. honestly. But it's, yeah. So like, it's sort of like that. But then sometimes, you know, if it's been a long day, sometimes I come home and I'm like, I can't even turn the TV on. Like, I sometimes I can't even hear more voices, because I'm just at that point, I'm at the capacity. So learning to recognize that has been a bit of a process. But honestly, like, just taking that time and saying, you know, like, I need to just sort of chill for today, or you know, take that space. We spend a lot of time with our family. Like, we'll just go over and say hi and those sort of things. So that kind of fills my cup a bit. But honestly, just reading and then, you know, having those moments of freak out with my friend, and she tells me to be calm. And that is kind of what I do. I could probably improve on my self-care routine.
I think we all could, right?
Truly. Yeah,
there's always a space for improvement.
Yeah.
But good enough is good enough.
Yeah.
Right? Like, just as long as you're, like, taking enough care. And
yeah.
And you're coming back enough to your, closer yeah. to your baseline, it doesn't have to be perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
As yeah. long as you still aren't, you know, pouring from empty cup at the end of the day.
Yeah. The week. Yeah. Yeah, and that's true, right? It's, like, finding those moments where it's like, okay, I feel a little bit overwhelmed. Like, what do I need? And figuring out what I need in those moments. Do I need more connection with someone? Do I need a bit of space? Do I need a sweet treat? Which is always yes. Then, like, allowing me to have those things is sort of a big piece of figuring out what self-care looks like for me.
Yeah, I would echo a lot of that. I'm a big walker and shouldn't say a big hiker, but I go on a hike with my girlfriends when we're out at the cabin. Nature is big, and friends. Friends are big, but I'm also very solitary, and could sit alone. It's an effort to go out. I know once I'm out, it's going to be great, but it's a bit of an effort. And yeah, like, that self-care is sometimes hard. Like, you know, like, I just want to be alone, but I know it's going to be better if I see people. And so it's a bit of a struggle in that way. Also been getting pedicures every couple of weeks.
Love that. Nice. Love that.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, not feeling guilty. That's the biggest thing. You can't feel guilty about the decisions that you make. If I decide not to go out and I lie on the couch, I'm not going to feel guilty about it. I'm going to thoroughly enjoy it and relax. And then
give yourself that permission.
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing nurturing about guilt and shame.
No, that's not helpful.
I find that, like, kind of carefully, quietly tending, like, doing, like, taking care of my basic needs, like, making sure I've cooked something, doing my laundry, which I hate to do. Like, I'm not going to lie, laundry's the bane of my existence. So
that's fair.
Actually taking care of it is, like, it's a big thing for me to
Make sure. So rewarding.
All. Yeah, it's
super and rewarding. Accomplished.
Yeah. But it also just makes me feel like someone took care of me, even though that someone was me.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I find it just really, it's just, like, really calming in that way. So yeah, just, like, carefully tending, just going back to, like, super basics.
Yeah.
Is, like, I think my biggest self-care. It seems, like, obvious, but in my schedule and with the things on my plate, that kind of basic care is not a given.
Right.
You know? Like, I can easily, like, go through a drive-thru too many nights a week.
Yes.
Or ordering too many nights a week.
Yeah.
And, you know, you start to feel just kind of really blah.
Yeah.
I was going to mention schedule too. Like, right now I'm working kind of 3 days a week, and it's a nice balance. Like, that balance of schedule is a big thing for me too.
That's good.
Work-life balance.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to increase that. I don't know if I have the opportunity, but I like a good work-life balance. That's self-care for me.
Well, I think it's important, right? When you look, you can't spread yourself so thin that you are no longer able to, you know, give what you need to yourself and to others, right? And yeah, it's kind of an interesting balance with, like, practicum and work and all the things and schoolwork. But it's fun. I'm a person who needs to be busy. If I'm not busy, then I will find something to fill my schedule. So I'm happy to do something, you know, have an hour in between, and, like, that'll be the time I sit down and then I can go. But in those hours, you know, then I allow myself to do nothing, right? If that's what I want to do, I can watch TV or I can read my book or go on a walk and be like, that is the task for that time. Mm-hmm. And then we move on to the next thing, right? So it's been interesting transition.
Yeah. So do either of you have any final thoughts about this journey, about being a therapist, or even anything that you want to convey to clients about the work that you could do together?
I think it ultimately comes down to the fact that I feel like the luckiest girl in the world to be able to do this. So I think firmly that, like, the things that scare you the most are the places that you grow. Mm-hmm. And I have had to remind myself of that multiple times. So even just thinking about the scary thing can kind of be the place that it starts. And if you feel like you want some support on the way, then it's out there, right? And it might not be me, but there will be someone out there that it could be. And I hope that you find that person.
Mm-hmm. I've been finding this work so rewarding. Not that I didn't expect that, but mm-hmm. it just comes in different ways and it hits you when you don't mm-hmm. realize it. It's been really rewarding and I'm grateful for it. Mm-hmm. I am. Yeah.
All right, well, thank you to both of you for joining me here on this podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I wish you all the best in your practicum and in your practices after you're done here.
Thanks so much.
All right, you take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining our conversation today. If you would like to book a session, you can visit our website at safeharbortherapy.com or our booking page at safeharbor.jnapp.com. That's safeharbor.jnapp.com. For more info, or if you have questions or even suggestions for our podcast, you may write us at info@safeharbortherapy.com. We hope you'll join us again for our next conversation with Safe Harbor Therapy.